At home, part of our routine at home before we go to bed, before we tuck the boys into bed at home, is we always have Dyson and Blade take turns saying prayers. And a couple of weeks ago, after Mikey did the new prayer warrior thing, Blade went to the back and he picked up one of those prayer warrior papers that have the names of the kids on it. And the reason he did that is because he wanted to pray for all the kids on that. So he keeps by his bed at home a list of all the names of the kids so that he could be praying for all of them. And I think it's really cool. I think it's really cute. I'm proud of him for that. But the reason I say that is I'm bringing that point up to do this. He's growing up. He's maturing. Dyson is growing up, you know. Tia's growing up. How many of you guys are growing up? Hopefully, you know, we're all growing up, right? You know, some people would say, Nathan, you're not. And I've been accused of that. But the truth of the matter is we're all growing up. We're all maturing. And if somebody's not growing up, if somebody's not maturing, then that's a very serious thing, right? If somebody's not growing up like they should be growing up, then there's a problem. There is a condition that was first diagnosed in 1966 by Dr. Andreas Rett, and it is called Rett syndrome. I've spoken about it a couple of times here at church. I wrote an article about it in the Bible Meditator. Rett syndrome is a condition of regression. It's a condition where somebody actually stops maturing and stagnates or actually gets worse. And I have a quote that I want to share with you regarding Rett syndrome. And this is from the Wikipedia organization. It says, the nature of the disease. The infant with Rett syndrome often avoids detection until 6 to 18 months due to a relatively normal appearance and some developmental progress. However, closer scrutiny reveals disturbance of the normal spontaneous limb and body movements that are thought to be regulated in the brainstem. Okay, so I'll stop for a second. Can I tell you what's happening? They're saying that the child seems to be growing well, and then sometime between 6 months to 18 months, something starts not happening right. A child that perhaps was learning to walk, learning to crawl, all of a sudden they're not able to walk anymore. They're not able to crawl anymore. A child who was learning to communicate, all of a sudden starts losing the ability to communicate. And it happens mostly in little girls. But the conditions is such that they're developing normally at first. And then they start going backwards. Or they start stagnating. And let me ask you, let me just point this out. Let me see what you think on this. If you're not growing, if you're stagnating, are you growing less mature? By my standards, you are. So they start stagnating or actually going backwards. Again, they may lose to walk. But listen to the rest of this quote. The brief period of developmental progress is followed by stagnation and regression of previously acquired skills. Can you imagine if you had at your house a 7-month-old girl and she's starting to learn to crawl and all of a sudden you start noticing she doesn't crawl anymore. She's not able to move anymore. Or perhaps even worse, she's 18 months, she's a year and a half, she's walking, and all of a sudden she's not able to walk, she's not able to crawl, and she starts regressing. Would that be a scary thing? Now, obviously, we're going to try to make a spiritual application to this. And as you read this, if I read this quote one more time, the last line, as I read this, think about it from a spiritual perspective. The brief period of developmental progress is followed by stagnation and regression of previously acquired skills. How many times have you known a Christian who's baptized, they're on fire, they're coming to church, they're coming to Bible class, they're doing all they can, and then all of a sudden they just start to stagnate. They start to move backwards. Or maybe you know somebody who's been a Christian for 50 years and they've never really moved forward. From a spiritual perspective, that's a horrible thing. If you're not moving forward in your maturity as a Christian, you're like, you have spiritual Rett syndrome. This is going to be a sermon that I think I'm going to step on toes on. And I don't like doing that necessarily, but sometimes you have to step on toes. And that's just the nature of the game. If the Apostle Paul didn't want to, he would have to not tell the truth if he was not going to step on toes at times. So I'm going to step on some toes today, and I'm going to apologize in this that I'm going to step on your toes. Hopefully you won't be angry with me if I anger you. But I'm also going to say this. I'm doing it because I think that this is a real serious problem, not just in our church, but in churches all across the country. I think it's a problem. And so I want to talk about some spiritual marks of maturity. Now, I can quickly tell you, we can quickly talk about some spiritual marks of maturity, right? Well, you should be moving forward in your ability, your desire to teach, to spread the gospel. I'm not going to talk about the real obvious ones this morning. I want to pick on three ones this morning that I think are a little less obvious. but definitely, I don't think, any less important. The first one I want to talk about is personal time. How do you spend your personal time? You know, time is an asset. Time is a blessing God has given us, and we are stewards of it. How do you spend your time? If I were to ask the question, how many of you wasted time this week? I don't need you to raise your hand. How many of you wasted time? Now, I'm going to quickly ask that question, and then I'm going to point this out. I don't think it's a waste of time to spend time on the couch with your family, relaxing, being leisure, watching TV. I don't think that's a waste of time necessarily. I think it can be. At what cost does that come? But I don't think relaxation in and of itself is a waste of time. But I want to talk about your stewardship of time. And I want to talk about, for a moment, improper uses of time. Well, what causes us to waste time? Well, I came up with three things that I think causes us to waste time. The first one is improper priorities. We have our priorities messed up. Turn over with me to Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10. I want to begin in verse 38. Begin in verse 38 of Luke 10. Now as they were on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving. Let's stop for a second and consider what's happening. Jesus Christ comes into the home of Mary and Martha. Mary sits at the feet of Christ. But Martha is distracted because she has a lot of work to do. She has visitors in her house. How many of you are just like Martha? I know I am. My wife will always tell me, let the dishes wait till later. We have company. And I'm over there scrubbing. It's not that important, is it? But Mary here has the right priorities. And Martha here is wasting her time because her priorities are wrong. Is she doing something that needs to be done? Yes. Something that is good to do? Absolutely. Don't use this as an excuse not to do your dishes. She's doing things that need to be done. But the bottom line is her priorities are not right. So in improper priorities, they can cause us to waste time. Even important items like she's doing, it's important to do your work. But if they're not regulated by the right priorities, they can be a waste of time. Another one that's very obvious that causes us to waste time, and I'm not going to have you turn to any passages, but I will refer you to look up on your own Luke chapter 6, verses 6 through 9. In that passage, you may recall Solomon compares, he said, well, I'll just read it to you. Solomon says, "Go to the ant, O sluggard." We know what a slug is, right? Little things that are in your garden and you salt them. And then you take the fork and you, no, you don't eat them, right? But you know what they are. When you think of a slug, what do you think? Something that just lays there, doesn't move around. So he's telling them, he says, go to the ant. It's kind of interesting that he uses an ant and the action of a slug, if you will. Go to the ant, O sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief officer or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. Now watch this. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? One of the great ways we waste our time is that we simply are lazy. I made a comment earlier, it's not necessarily bad to sit on your couch and relax and enjoy your family. That's not necessarily a bad thing. But again, it has to be set in the proper priority, the proper situation. Otherwise, we're just wasting our time. We can be lazy and just sit around and that's not going to accomplish anything. The third cause for us to waste our time that I think is a big problem is procrastination. We simply put something off that we know we should do. I read this thing recently on how to be a better steward of your time. I thought it was kind of interesting. They gave tips on being better stewards. And it's one of the things that I thought was very informative or thought-provoking is it said, if you have a job to do that takes less than 30 seconds, do it right now. Just go do it. And when you take care of small jobs, when they arise, you know what? You're a better steward of your time because you'll find that you're much more efficient. I want to read to you something that you guys all have heard, I'm sure. You guys remember back in the 80s, these things came out called round tuits? You guys remember those? You don't remember? Okay, Laura, you're too young. Well, you'll learn what they are. Here is a picture of a little round thing, and it's just called a tuit. How many of you remember these? Raise your hand. All right, a lot of you. Okay, this is a procrastination tool to make you stop procrastinating. And there are different kinds of tuits out there, and I want to read to you this tuit. This is a spiritual tuit. And I want to read to you this one. It says, "Tuvets are hard to come by, especially round ones. After years of searching, I have finally managed to obtain a round tuvet. No longer will I have to wait to do all those tasks I have put off. So guard this one and never lose it. Don't let anyone take it away from you. Now that you have one, there should be fantastic results. I have heard people say I'll be faithful to the Lord just as soon as I get around to it. Thankfully, it is finally here. And now that you have your very own round to it, many things have been needed to be done for the Lord should finally get done. Have you ever said, I'll go visit a friend as soon as I get around to it? Or maybe I'll read my Bible when I get around to it. Perhaps you've used one of these, I'll go to the church or I'll join an organization if I get around to it. I'll help my parents or neighbors. I'll pray for the needy. I'll say a prayer for someone. I'll do a good deed. I'll tell a friend about God. I'll tell someone I love you. I'll visit a sick friend if I get around to it. These are all in the past. Great new things will be in store for you in the future. For now, you have a round to it." It's a procrastination, isn't it? That's the point they're making here. Procrastination is a waste of time. So I've talked about three things that cause us to waste time. Improper priorities, laziness, and procrastination. So with this in mind, I want to ask the question, what is a proper use of time? What is a proper use of time? And I'm going to make this point. This is a list that I've put together, beginning with least important, going to most important. And I'm going to make this point if I haven't already made it. If these are out of order, I think you are still wasting time. These are all important things. But if you put them in the wrong place, you're wasting time. The first thing I wrote down was caring for necessary items in life. That means work, school, home, like Martha was doing. Those are important things to do. It's important that you take care of things at work, that you take care of things at school. It's important that you maintain some sort of normalcy in your home life. That's an important thing. That's not a waste of time, unless you put it above what it should be placed. So the next thing I have on here is caring for other people. That should be a priority in your life. It is a proper use of time. The next thing I have is caring for family. I think if you care for other people around you before you care for your family, you're wasting your time. You're using your time ineffectively again. Remember, the Apostle Paul said that if you do not care for your own household, you are worse than an infidel. So we have a responsibility first to our family, then to others. So again, these are all important things, but placed in the wrong order, they are still a waste of time. The most important thing that I have on my list is caring for yourself. That may sound selfish, but if you're not spiritually right, you're not going to be able to properly care for anybody else. There comes times in your life where you may have to tell your husband, your wife, your uncle, your aunt, your family, your whatever, I'm going to take care of what I need to spiritually, even if it makes you unhappy. I've heard of families, you've heard of families, who were perhaps Muslim in their religion, who have left the Muslim faith and became Christians, even if it meant it cost them their family. The most important, number one priority you should have in your life is your spiritual walk. Anything you place above that is a waste of time. The Apostle Paul said in Ephesians chapter 5, I'm going to have you turn there. Go to Ephesians chapter 5, please. Ephesians chapter 5. I want to begin in verse 15. Verse 15. "Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise but as wise." Watch this. "Making the best use of the time, because the days are evil." He doesn't say make some use, use some time good. He says make the best use of your time. To make the best use of your time means you have your priorities right. It means you don't let it waste. Just like everything else God has blessed us with, we will have to give an answer to God for our use of time. We will have to. Another great passage to look at, I'm going to encourage you to do it on your own, is the worthy woman of Proverbs chapter 31. Here is a chapter that talks about proper use of time, proper priorities. A passage that looks at what a person who is a worthy woman, how she lives her life. And in verse 15 of that verse, of that chapter, I want to read one verse. It says, "She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maids." Proper use of time. So challenge number one this morning is be a better steward of your time. Encourage your family to be better stewards of their time. If it is a gift from God, and I believe it is, we will have to give an account to God for how we use it. That's challenge number one. The second challenge, the second mark of immaturity that I'm going to talk about this morning is personal accountability. Personal accountability. This is the one I've talked about in lessons in the past. And I think this is one that is, again, way too often overlooked. We live in a society that we don't want to take responsibility for our actions. How many times have you guys heard the phrase applied to different things? He's a victim, she's a victim of society. That's such a common phrase. It's like whatever they've done is not their fault. If they're an alcoholic, not their fault. If they're homosexual, it's not their fault. If they killed somebody, not their fault. Now, I'm not that far off on that killing one, am I? The point I'm trying to make is we live in a society that teaches us it's okay to be making mistakes because it's not your fault. But there is in Scripture numerous accounts, numerous examples, and the need for us to take responsibility for our actions. And I wanted to ask the question and have you kind of think about it. Why don't we want to take responsibility for our actions? Why don't we want to step up and say, that was my fault, I sinned, that was my fault, I messed up, that was my fault, I broke the lamp, I broke the... You know, I remember growing up as a kid, we played that game, me and my brothers, of not taking responsibility. I remember we broke a lot. We broke windows, we didn't... never. I don't know how that window got broke, Dad. We'd all lie and try to blame the other brothers. It was not a good thing. But we often put off, try not to take responsibility for our actions. Why don't we take responsibility? Well, one of the things I just kind of hinted at, there's a fear of consequences, isn't there? Maybe you've made a mistake, maybe you've had sin in your life, but you know if you step up to the plate and you say, I've sinned, or I've made this mistake, maybe it costs you your family. That's a horrible thing to lose. Maybe it costs you your job. Maybe it costs you financially. Maybe it gets you a spanking. That may sound small, but to a little kid that's a big deal. But the bottom line is we are challenged to take responsibility for our actions. Why else do we fail to take responsibility for our actions? Well, perhaps you're ashamed of something you've done. You've sinned, you're embarrassed, and so you don't want to admit it. Or perhaps another reason is pride. You know, to have to give an account to somebody is almost as if you're below them. Well, why should I have to tell them what I did? I'm not below them. So there's a lot of reasons, perhaps, that we don't acknowledge our mistakes. But we look at a lot of biblical examples. We can look at a lot of people in Scriptures who either did acknowledge their sins or who did not. And every time you see, if you look at the patterns, you're more blessed for acknowledging your mistakes. Talk about King David for a minute. Turn over to the book of 1 Samuel while we're talking about him. You may recall how he is described in Scriptures. He is described as a man after God's own heart. 1 Samuel 22, by the way, if I didn't tell you what chapter. He's described as a man after God's own heart. He followed King Saul as leader, as king of Israel, right? King Saul is not described as a man after God's own heart. King Saul is a man rejected by God. One of the great differences in these two men is that David was always ready to acknowledge and take responsibility for his sins, and King Saul was not. There's a lot of examples I can show you about King David. I've only picked out two this morning. The first one is in 1 Samuel 22. We're going to begin in verse 20 in just a moment. In this passage, David has gone and he has gone to the city of Nob. He has got food from the priest there. He has gotten a weapon from the priest there. King Saul is trying to find David to kill him. King Saul and his men, Doeg the Edomite and others, they go to the city of Nob. They find out what David has done. King Saul tells the people, tells his men, kill the priests. All the priests of the city are to be killed. But his own men refuse to do this. But one man who's a very rotten man, Doeg the Edomite, he says, I'll do it. So he goes and he kills the priests. All the priests die except for one. That priest runs and he finds David. And in verse 20, 1 Samuel 22, let's read what happens. But one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar told David that Saul had killed the priests of the Lord. And David said to Abiathar, I knew on that day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would surely tell Saul. Watch what David says. I have occasioned the death of all the persons of your father's house. David says, this is my fault they died. I'm the one who brought this tragedy to you guys. And so he's already has a sense of remorse. Was it his fault? Not really. If you want to blame somebody, I think Saul's a lot more to blame. I think Doeg the Edomite's a lot more to blame. But David was willing to say, I had a part in this. Skip to 2 Samuel chapter 24. 2 Samuel chapter 24. In this passage, you may recall, David has been moved by pride and by Satan himself to count and see how great his army is. David wants to say, look at what I have done. David wants to say, man, I have put together a powerful army. I am a good king. So he's moved by pride to do this. And he's warned by one of his commanders, don't do it, David. This is not a thing of God. This is pride. Don't do it. But David does it anyways. God comes to David and says, David, pick how you're going to be punished. And he gives David three options. And David chooses the option that says, God, you punish me because you're merciful. So God says, okay, David, I'm going to punish you. So God starts striking down the Israelite people. 70,000 men have been killed because of David's sin. And the angel is still standing there, still ready to strike. And David in verse 17 makes this comment. Then David spoke to the Lord when he saw the angel who was striking the people and said, behold, watch this, I have sinned, and I have done wickedly. But these sheep, what have they done? Please let your hand be against me and against my father's house. David says, God, punish me. It's my fault. They didn't do it. They're innocent victims. Would this be a scary thing? God is striking down people. The angel of the Lord is standing there. This has to be a frightening thing. But David says, God, don't do that. Please punish me. That's one of the things that made David a man after God's own heart. When you compare him to King Saul, the man that preceded him, turn over to 1 Samuel chapter 13. I want to look at how Saul dealt with his sin. 1 Samuel chapter 13. We're going to begin in verse 11. Saul was told here in this passage to go ahead and to wait for Samuel the prophet to come. And Samuel was going to come and he was going to make a sacrifice. But Saul gets impatient. So Saul takes and he makes a sacrifice himself. And about the time he's completed the sacrifice, Samuel comes on the scene. And Samuel says in verse 11, Samuel said, what have you done? And Saul said, when I saw that the people were scattering from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines had mustered at Michmash. Let's stop for a second. What's Saul doing? Making an excuse. Here's why I did it. Verse 12. I said, now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I have not sought the favor of the Lord. Watch this. So I forced myself and offered the burnt offering. Isn't that just kind of, it's almost humorous, isn't it? I forced myself. I didn't want to, but I forced myself because, you know, I knew I had to do it. So I forced myself. Skip down two chapters. 1 Samuel chapter 15. In this passage, again, King Saul was told to go and do something. He was told to go and utterly destroy the Amalekites, destroy their animals, destroy all the people, destroy their king. Don't bring anything back alive. But as Samuel's coming up on the camp, he hears the sheep, he hears the oxen. And so he comes to Samuel, Samuel comes to Saul, and notice what happens in verse 14. 1 Samuel 15, 14. Now let's back up to verse 13. And Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said to him, blessed be you to the Lord. I have performed the commandment of the Lord, which he had not done. Verse 14. And Samuel said, what then is this bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen that I hear? Saul said, they have brought them from the Amalekites, and the people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice to the Lord your God, and the rest we have devoted to destruction. What does Saul do? When Samuel challenges on it, first thing he does is he sells out his own people. They did it. They brought him up. Saul refuses to take responsibility for his actions. Saul's going to be rejected by God. David is going to be a man chosen by God, a man after God's own heart. You know, there's a lot of stories in the Scripture that demonstrate a lack of taking responsibility for your actions. One of the ones that I think is I don't want to say humorous, but kind of humorous. You may recall when Moses was up onto the mountain. He's receiving the Ten Commandments, and Aaron starts making the golden calf, and he comes down, and Moses is questioning Aaron, "Why'd you do this?" And he said, "Well, the people wanted me to, and really, Moses, it wasn't my fault. I just took the gold and threw it into the fire, and the calf popped out." I mean, people in Scriptures are refusing to take responsibility for their actions. Turn over to the book of Luke, chapter 15. Luke chapter 15. We may recall this story, and I'm sure you all do, the story of the prodigal son in Luke 15. You remember that the son has come to his father. He says, "Father, give me my inheritance." So his father gives him his portion. He takes his money. He goes into another country. He blows his money on parties. Essentially, that's what he does. He parties all of his money away. He wakes up one day, comes to his senses, if you will. He's feeding pigs, something a Jew should never be involved in at the time. He's feeding pigs. He's sitting there in the pig trough. He's trying to eat the pig's food. He realizes how bad things have gotten. And notice what he says in verse 18. As he comes to his senses, he says, "I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants." And we know the story, right? He goes to his father, but his father refuses to make his request. Instead, he doesn't say, "I'm going to make you a servant. I'm going to make you my son again." Full privileges. Why? One of the reasons he does it is because he was willing to take responsibility for his actions. There's going to be consequences when we make sins, but we need to step up. We need to take responsibility for them. Challenge number two then is this. When you make a mistake, live up to it. Take responsibility for it. Mistakes can be a blessing. They really can. We can learn from our mistakes. We can be a better person because of our mistakes. The reality is God already knows anyways, doesn't He? So who are we trying to fool? Step up, acknowledge your mistakes, take responsibility. The actions, I mean, the consequences may be horrible. They absolutely might be. But consequences on earth, as bad as they are, pale in comparison to consequences that await us if we don't take responsibility for our actions. I want to share with you a little story. You may have heard of it. And this demonstrates the nobility, if you will, the honor of stepping up and taking responsibility. I think it's a powerful story. You may recall a few years back, there was a spelling bee in Washington. In the fourth round of the spelling bee, a young lady named Rosalie Elliott from South Carolina, she was asked to spell the word avowal, A-V-O-W-A-L. But because of her strong accent, she spelled the word, and the judges couldn't understand what she said. Did she spell it A-V-O-W-A-L or E-L? And so they talked amongst themselves. They thought about it. They played it back, listened to it over and over and over again. And they could not determine what she said. So pretty soon, the chief judge, John Lloyd, he turns and he asks the only person who could know what was said. He turns and asks Rosalie. He says, "Rosalie, what did you say? Was the letter an A or an E?" By this point, Rosalie already knew the answer. Because everybody had been whispering around her. She'd heard the other children telling the right answer. She'd heard the audience telling the right answer. So she knew what the answer was. But she didn't hesitate. She immediately said, "I misspelled it. I used the letter E." And as she walked down, everybody cheered her. Because you see, there is something noble and honorable in taking responsibility for our actions. Taking responsibility for our mistakes. So challenge number two is to do that. Step up if you have made a mistake and take responsibility for it. The consequences may be horrible, but consequences here pale in comparison to eternal consequences. The third challenge, personal responsibility. Sounds kind of like personal accountability, but it's a little different. Let me tell you why. Delegation, that's a good thing, right? We all think delegation is a powerful tool we should use to get work done. Good thing to do. Sharing the tasks. Working with other people, that's a good thing to do. But there comes a time where sometimes we need to step up individually and do the work that we see needs to be done. If you see a good work, don't call someone else and tell them, "Hey, I got a great work for you to do." I have seen that problem in almost every church I've spent time in. A problem of calling somebody else, telling them you have a work to do, and do it. And you don't do it yourself, but you give it to somebody else. This is a serious problem. If you see a work and it lies within your ability to do, perform that task. Go to Joshua chapter 17. The book of Joshua chapter 17. I want to begin in verse 14. What's happening here is they've come in, the Israelites have, they've already left Exodus of Egypt, of course. They've come in, Moses has died, Joshua's now leading them. They've came into the land of Canaan, they're fighting the inhabitants of the land of Canaan, trying to drive them out. The tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, the children of Joseph, they're not happy with their allotment. So they come to Joshua with a complaint. Notice Joshua 17, beginning in verse 14. Then the people of Joseph, so this is talking about the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, the people of Joseph spoke to Joshua saying, "Why have you given me but one lot and one portion as an inheritance, although I am a numerous people, since all along the Lord has blessed me?" And Joshua said to them, verse 15, "If you are a numerous people," watch this, "go up by yourselves to the forest and there clear the ground for yourselves in the land of the Perizzites and the Rephaim, since the hill country of Ephraim is too narrow for you." So look at what Joshua responds to them. It lies within you the ability to perform this task. Go up and do it. You don't need to try to get the whole nation of Israel to do it. You have the ability. You notice the need. Take care of it. Let's look at the rest of this passage. Verse 16. The people of Joseph said, "The hill country is not enough for us. Yet all the Canaanites who dwell on the plain have chariots of iron, both those in Beth Shean and its villages, and those in the valley of Jezreel." Then Joshua said to the house of Joseph, to Ephraim and Manasseh, "You are a numerous people and have great power. You shall not have one allotment only, but the hill country shall be yours. For though it is a forest," watch this, "you shall clear it and possess it to its farthest borders. For you shall drive out the Canaanites, though they have chariots of iron and though they are strong." Do you see what Joshua tells them? You have the ability. This is something you're wanting. Granted, you should have it. You go take care of it. Challenge number three is this. Don't give to someone else the task to do something you can do if you can do it. If you see a task that can be done, that you know needs to be done, and it lies within your ability to do it, do it. Perform that task. The Apostle Paul said in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 10 and 11, he said, "But we urge you, brothers, to aspire to live quietly and to mind your own affairs," watch this, "and to work with your hands, as we instructed you." There is in each one of us a responsibility to perform the tasks that we can do. We live in a society, again, going back to a society situation, that says, you know what, you stay at home, don't get a job, we'll provide for you through welfare. Now, there is absolutely a need for welfare for those people who cannot work. But the Apostle Paul said it again in 1 Thessalonians, if a man does not work, neither should he eat. He doesn't say if a man cannot work. There is a difference between cannot work and does not work. But the point I'm trying to make, and I think it reflects Paul's point here, if you have in you the ability to do a task, do it. Do it. I want to go to Ephesians chapter 4. Those are the three challenges, by the way, for the day, and I'll recap them in a second. But I want to go to Ephesians chapter 4. I want to talk about partial maturity. What do I mean by partial maturity? Let's talk about this for a second. Let's say you have that child, and your child is growing up physically. They're doing dandy. They're doing great, you know. They're playing, they're running around. But mentally, they're not growing up. Mentally, they are struggling. Mentally, they're behind. Mentally, they're not hitting the benchmarks they need to be hitting. Are you concerned with that child? Absolutely. Let's look at it differently. Let's say your child is mentally doing the things he should be doing. He's hitting all the benchmarks. He's saying all the little words, making all the sounds, but physically they're behind. They're not where they should be physically. Are you concerned? Absolutely. None of us would in this life want somebody to mature partially. But spiritually it's no different. I have heard so many people in so many situations say, "Well, you know what? I do so good at this, 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 and this, but here's my struggle. But because I'm doing good over here, that's okay to have that struggle." Partial maturity is not complete maturity. And Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15, listen to what the Apostle Paul says in this passage. Listen to what he says. "We are to grow up in every way into Him," that is, into Christ. We are to grow up in every way. Partial maturity is a maturity that's not complete. We need to, as Christians, have this as our goal, to grow up in every way in Christ Jesus. I know, as I think of my own life, I'm lacking in certain maturity marks that I need to have as a Christian. And maybe I don't struggle with this sin, or maybe I don't struggle with this sin, but if I'm struggling with this, I still have room to grow. And I think in each of us, we can look at our lives and we can say, you know what? I have this that I struggle with. As mature as you might be in every other area, and you have one or two areas you're struggling with, brothers, you have room to grow. Don't use it as an excuse because you're doing good over here. We need to be doing good. As Paul said, we need to be growing up in every way. Real quickly, I want to recap it this morning. First of all, challenge number one, make the most of your time. It is a blessing from God. You are a steward of it. Use it to God. Use it to God's glory. Use it effectively. Number two, take responsibility for your actions. When you make a mistake, when you fall down, if you sin, maybe it's not even a sin. Maybe you just crashed into a car. You know, take responsibility for your actions. Be willing to step up and face the consequences, whatever they may be. I think a great biblical example of this is Zacchaeus, right? Remember him? We talked about him in class a little bit this morning. Zacchaeus. He was a tax collector. He had defrauded people out of money, but when Christ comes to him, he tells Christ, and by the way, Christ didn't tell him, you need to make it right. He volunteers to do this. He says, if I have defrauded anybody, I will make it right fourfold. Zacchaeus was willing to take consequences. He was willing to make right the mistakes he had made. Challenge number three, when you can do for yourself, do for yourself. If you see a task that needs to be done, and you have the ability to do it, do it. Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10, he said, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. He doesn't say whatever your hand finds to do, call and give it to somebody else. He said, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. We all have sins. We all have things we struggle with. We all are lacking maturity in some area. Or at least I would bet that we are. I know I am. But if you're here this morning and you have these areas that you need to work on, perhaps we can help you with. Perhaps we can offer prayers for you. Perhaps you've not yet been baptized into Christ. If you have not, we can help you with that as well. Anything at all, please come as we sing a song that's been selected.